Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilo Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Chagpar welcomes Dr. Victor Chang. Dr. Chang is assistant clinical professor of medicine at Yale School of Medicine. Here's Anish Chagpar.
So, Victor, why don't we start off just by you telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do and, you know, how long you've been here and what your day-to-day activity is.
Wow. I'm a medical oncologist. I work in one of the cancer care centers based up in Waterbury. And I spend a good part of my day taking care of patients, direct patient contact. And I spend a lot of time, too, interacting with residents and students through Yale.
And so do you treat a particular kind of cancer, or you treat all kinds of cancer?
Well, I have a personal interest in hematologic malignancies and lymphoma. But because I'm based out in the community, I do a lot of general oncology, and that's really what I enjoy doing.
And I understand that you also have an academic bent as well. Is that right?
Yes. I direct the hematology oncology curriculum at St. Mary's Hospital, a Yale-affiliated internal residency medical program.
So, you know, Victor, we started off the show talking a little bit about hereditary factors in cancer. And I think one of the things that a lot of our listeners are thinking about and hearing about, it's almost become a buzzword these days, is personalized medicine. Talk a little bit about what exactly that is, and is there really a revolution happening in cancer now, and what is that?
Well, for sure, the field has been transformed by molecular targeted therapy, and the root of this type of treatment really came, well, really when I was in training in medical school when, you know, this was before microarray was available, and we were looking at hereditary factors leading to cancer development, and some of the research led to available targets that we can use to treat cancer, if you will. So if an individual have, let's say, breast cancer, there are overexpressed molecular protein targets in the cell. These cells can become, targets for,
targets for treatment.
Right.
But so, Victor, help us to understand, you know, if we take the example of breast cancer, for example, mm-hmm. You know, we talk about hereditary factors, and I think a lot of us, when we think about hereditary factors, think about family history, and we think about BRCA1 and 2 gene mutations and things like that. But then when we think about targeted therapies, some of us start thinking about, you know, things like estrogen receptor because people we know may be taking drugs that block estrogen or block this molecule called HER2-new. Are those things the same? Are they different? How does that play out? Can you talk a little bit about the hereditary factors and then these targeted therapies and connections or a lack of connections between the two?
Well, I mean, they're somewhat related. You know, targeted therapy basically looks at molecular protein expression in the cells, and these cells can occur in any types of breast cancer, not just hereditary cancer syndromes. And I have a lot of patients who are excited about what's happening with treatment in cancer in general, and they come to me and ask about whether these treatments are appropriate for them. And I try to explain to them that, you know, what's most important in terms of hereditary factors is still personal history and family history. And then these cancer syndromes are very rare, but the study of these syndromes have led to these treatments that are now available. We're now tailoring treatment for individuals with these areas of understanding with the molecular expression in the cancer cells. We actually can make prognosis, and we can select individuals who will respond to treatments that are available. it's quite exciting in a way because now we're tailoring treatment for individuals as opposed to just pouring, you know, chemicals or poison into people's veins and hoping that the cancer cells will respond.
So talk a little bit about hereditary factors, and you talked a little bit about personal history and family history. So people may be listening to the show tonight and thinking, you know, what is it in a family history that's important? If I'm looking at breast cancer, do I only look at my mother's side? Do I also have to look at my father's side? Is it only my immediate relatives, like my mother and my sister, or do I need to take a broader history? If somebody in my family had colon cancer, does that increase my risk of developing breast cancer? Talk a little bit about all of those things in terms of family history and how it affects people's risk.
Well, you know, the questions you're asking me actually comes up a lot in practice, you know, because whenever I meet someone who's been newly diagnosed with cancer, the question eventually comes to, how did I get this? Are my family members going to get this type of cancer as well? So I try to explain to them that cancer syndromes, and, you know, people are quite savvy these days going on the internet, and they will ask me specific cancer syndromes, whether they have cancer of the colon or breast. And I tell them, you know, it's your own personal history that's number one that will trump everything, and then it's family history. Certainly you start with the immediate family members, and you look through the generations as well and the second cousins, etc., and you see if there are any patterns that arise where you have rare cancers perhaps that are happening in the family, or even common cancers that happen in clusters among family members.
And so you would look at this family history and maybe find patterns, some of which may be common patterns, like we often think about breast and ovarian going together, but some that you might not think about, like things like thyroid and breast or colon and other things. Do you often refer these patients to genetic counseling, particularly for the rarer syndromes?
I try to. And even if I don't suspect rare cancer syndromes at play, I would like them to go to the counseling, the genetic clinic counseling, because it sort of gives them a background and it helps with their anxiety, if you will.
Yeah. So let's shift then to, if you have a genetic mutation or you have a hereditary factor, maybe even, I mean, it's possible, right, to have, if your mother had breast cancer and you went and you got tested and you tested negative for, quote, the gene, which often refers to a BRCA1 or 2 gene in the sense of breast cancer, and I focus a lot on breast cancer, so hence the conversation.
Of course.
But that family history still plays into your risk, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I have a lot of people who come with really major concerns about their family members, not just their own, because they see the incidence of certain types of cancer in the family, and they themselves want to know whether they're at risk or not. And it's not always very easy to assess that just from a history, if you will. You know, for that reason, I'm happy that they're, the genetic cancer clinic available at Yale, for example, where I can refer people to.
Okay, so let's suppose somebody comes to you and they say to you, okay, so I went, I had my genetic counseling, I tested negative, but can they still get, quote, targeted therapies?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that when we're looking at individuals who have been diagnosed with cancer, we're really looking to see whether their cancer will respond to treatment or not. And really, molecular genetics has really transformed the treatment of of oncology treatment, because now we can really look at individuals, look at their specific cancer cells, and see what is expressed on these cancer cells and see if they have the targets that will respond to treatment. And that will really minimize a lot of anxiety and potential side effects.
Yeah. I mean, certainly in terms of breast cancer, tamoxifen, which was a drug that was invented before I was born, is
that,
one
that
of those...
That to me is the original targeted right. therapy.
Yeah, you know. But it sounds like now there are so many more targets and so much more of technology and innovation that's going on to find these targets. Talk about, you know, you've mentioned molecular profiling and genetics a few times. Talk about how that's used in your practice in treating a variety of cancers.
So, you know, for me as a medical oncologist, I really think, you know, we're in an exciting time where we actually have drugs that are designed to target cancer cells, really. We're at the infancy of this type of treatment, if you will, because a lot of these drugs still work better with chemotherapy. But now we have available to us drugs that are honing in on specific targets. To me, this is like the infectious disease doctors having penicillin for the first time, really, where they're not just pouring poison down people's veins as well, trying to see if they can affect a cure. Here we are really trying to target specific cancer cells, the so-called, you know, guided missile approach, if you will. And, you know, to use the war analogy, you're trying to minimize collateral damage, and that's what we're seeing right now. Effective treatments with better quality of life, which is really exciting. And it's happening in every aspect of cancer that I'm seeing, whether it's breast, colon, prostate. And the exciting thing is, you know, I'm seeing this now in cancers like melanoma and renal cell, where we really haven't had very effective treatment for many years, if you will. And now we have drugs that are available that we expect to have good response. And we're even treating people with a pill. Who would have thought, really, a few years ago that we can effectively manage cancer with a pill? Granted, tamoxifen's been around for a long time, but you know, we're looking at cancers that traditionally has been very difficult to treat.
So walk us through how that happens. I mean, presumably with this guided missile approach, you take a biopsy and then what? You send that to some special laboratory that tells you what
right.
the target is.
And usually it could be immunohistochemical staining or even immunologic techniques. They can actually look for expression of these specific molecules. It could be on the surface of the cells or inside the cell. And these will, in some ways, give us a sense of how aggressive the cancer is. As you know, the BRCA expression connotes aggressiveness of the cancer, yet it also tells us that the cancer will respond great to drugs like Herceptin.
So, and the thing about this guided missile approach is really that you can now tell the difference between Mrs. Jones's cancer and Mr. Smith's cancer, although both presumably the same cancer, they may be different and treated with different therapies.
Yes, you can. And also, with genetic profiling now, you can also see who's going to be responsive to treatment and who's going to be resistant. And that's very good.
Perfect.
For the medical oncologists.
Well, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and then we're going to come back to this conversation. So please stay tuned to learn more about hereditary factors in cancer treatment with our guest, Dr. Victor Chang.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there is new hope. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments available to patients. A potential breakthrough in treating chemotherapy-resistant breast cancer is now being studied at Yale, combining BSI-101, a PARP inhibitor, with the chemotherapy drug irinotecan. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public radio station.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by our guest, Dr. Victor Chang. So Victor and I, right before the break, we were discussing all about targeted therapies and this whole era that we're in now of personalized medicine and targets and how we can use these targets as you called it, a guided missile approach that really targets cancers and prevents collateral damage. So I want to pick back up on that concept. Can you talk a little bit about how exactly we do that? What exactly do these targeted therapies do? How do they stop cancers?
Well, you know, in terms of these therapies, the drugs are really designed to hone in on the molecules that are expressed in the cells or on the cells, if you will. And these molecules tend to serve purposes, often in cell growth signaling, and a lot of these drugs will actually interfere with that and cause stoppage of the cell growth or proliferation. There are other types of molecules that are around as well that promotes, for example, blood vessel formation. So by cutting the blood supply off to the tumor cells with these drugs, you can affect a response or even a cure sometimes. In addition, you can have drugs that are targeted at molecules that promote cell death. There are so-called programmed cell death molecules that are being looked at actively, and drugs are being designed for this purpose. Then there are drugs that are used to rev up the immune system, if you will, in the body to fight cancer. And then as an extension of that, then you have drugs that are laced with toxin that can hone in on these targets and affect a kill, if you will.
So it sounds like there's been a lot of activity in terms of finding different ways to target cancer cells and specifically kill off those cancer cells without killing off normal cells.
Correct.
Well, it's certainly exciting times. And so how do these drugs and these targeted therapies actually get to the point where you can use them in everyday practice? How does that happen? I mean, presumably there's some biologist or geneticist or somebody working in a laboratory looking at cancer cells and figuring out targets. But then there's got to be a process that gets from this cancer cell has this target to I've got a drug that can target that target to this drug really works in mice to this drug really works in people. Can you talk about that process and how we go from discovery to cure?
I'm not so sure I'm the person to really comment on that, but I'm just happy there are people out there who actually look at what's been done in the bench side of research and try to take it to the clinical side. And I know when I was growing up in the training system, the translational research was sort of the big catchphrase, if you will, you know, trying to take what's available at the bench to the bedside. And I think certainly in oncology, we've done a very good job of doing that. I think we're sort of a model for other disciplines, if you will, that you know, we're doing research not just for the sake of learning, but we are also making it applicable for the better good of people, if you will.
But I think that in reality, you actually do participate in that chain, right? Because as we were talking a little bit at the break, one of the things that you, like many medical oncologists, do is really talk to your patients about clinical trials. So can you talk to us a little bit about what a clinical trial is, why it's important, and why patients should think about participating in clinical trials?
Well, let me just give you my perspective a little bit, because, you know, I started out really very interested in bench research. I was a lab rat, if you will. In medical school, I spent most of my free time in the lab looking at viral protein expression in cancer cells. And, you know, when I came to Yale, I came under the influence of Bernard Forget and really got a crash course in molecular genetics, if you will. And I never really thought that a lot of what was being developed at the time would really come into the clinical setting so quickly. You know, when I was in training as a fellow at Yale, microarray technology was just coming into beans. Now, you know, gene array profiling is just commonplace now. You are, you know, asked to select these profiled studies for your patients, and they can tell you what's their likelihood of recurrence for the given cancer that they have and whether they will respond well. So, you know, all these things have really made being a medical oncologist a really rich and rewarding experience, if you will. So in terms of the targeted treatments, the gene profiling aside, the fact that you can have more confidence in telling your patients that they should select a certain treatment and that it will work for them, it's wonderful. And I, you know, my hat's off to the researchers out there, including you for that matter, very active in clinical research. And I'm really excited about being a part of that, if you will, as a clinician. I can hopefully direct my patients into clinical trials. And there are many wonderful trials that are now available on the community through the, you know, Smilo Cancer Care Network. And I'm hoping that we will encourage and get a lot of people interested in participating in clinical studies.
So, Victor, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of our listeners and a lot of our patients worry about is they think to themselves, this is human experimentation, and I don't want to be a guinea pig. I don't want anything experimental because this is my life I am dealing with. I have cancer. What do you say to those patients?
Well, I think their fear is well-founded, basically. You know, you're going into the unknown. You really don't know how the drugs are going to work in your body, and you don't know how your body's going to react to the medications. You know, we sit down, we have a nice chat usually about clinical studies, and it takes a lot of time. I cannot really talk to them in the scheduled 15-minute visit, if you will. And but I think it's so important that I'm willing to take time out of my busy day to really sit down and talk to them and really try to guide them through the whole process of selecting a study to participate in. And, you know, at the end of the day, I certainly tell them if it's not for them for any reason, they should not participate.
Yeah. So certainly one thing that I think is clear is that participation in clinical trials or clinical research of any description is always a patient's choice. And for the most part, you can always opt out at any point. But I think the other thing that you're kind of intimating is that truthfully, there's a lot of benefit to participating in clinical research, in part because we're always comparing standard of care to what we think is better, right? So the atomic bomb that can, you know, wipe out an entire country versus a guided missile that can avoid collateral damage.
Well, you're putting it better than I can, certainly. Yes, absolutely. I'm in full agreement. It's, you know, it's tough enough to be diagnosed with cancer, and then to be faced with another decision about whether to participate in clinical trials is really, really difficult. I would never underestimate the amount of information they need to process and really that's added stress, if you will. Sometimes I feel terrible that I'm even bringing that aspect up about their treatment, that there's clinical studies. But I do tell my patients the studies we participate in often involve drugs that we already know work very well, and we want to know whether they work better. And it's so critical right now at this juncture in medical oncology with molecular targeted treatment. As I said before, it's like the infectious disease doctors finding penicillin.
Right.
we really need to know, you know, how to use these drugs. And the only way to know is to conduct clinical trials.
Right. So for people out there who are listening, who are thinking about clinical trials, appreciating all of the stress that you're under, the two things that I often tell patients to think about is, one, it is a well-known fact that people who participate in clinical trials tend to do better than people who don't, simply because they often have the availability of newer targeted drugs that we don't otherwise have off protocol. And the second is this real kind of sense of doing something good for the future of medicine, for future generations. And I think that a lot of patients are really drawn to the motivation of helping you, as you say, you know, once you've discovered penicillin, learning what you can do with that. That was on the backs of many patients who participated in clinical trials, and so with cancer care.
I think when you present it this way to the patients, most of them will agree to clinical study.
Yeah,
and it is really our job to make the whole process less intimidating. And I think, you know, we try very hard with, we have clinical research coordinators and based in our office just for that purpose, to make the whole process a lot easier in terms of information gathering and paperwork that's involved. So I'm hopeful that we will get more people on study.
And the other thing that I think is important to note is, you know, it used to be that if you wanted to participate in a clinical trial, and many people would travel to the big major academic centers, you know, the big cancer centers, to find a clinical trial that they could participate in because they know that that's how they can do better. And for some people who have otherwise incurable treatment, cancers that don't have good treatments, that's the only way that they can get treated. But now, you know, you've got studies available in the community.
Absolutely. And really, it's exciting where people do not have to travel now to New Haven, to the Smilow Hospital, to get their treatment. They can participate and study through our office, through our care center office up in Waterbury. And that is very nice. It, you know, they get to see the nurses and doctors they're used to, and they can participate in something meaningful where they're doing some good for the society.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful. I also, you know, want to make a point that, you know, people have certain ideas about clinical trials. Some people think, oh my gosh, my cancer is beyond help. And that's when clinical trials are offered to me. That is really very far from the case.
Mm-hmm.
With these molecular targeted treatments, now we have studies that are being conducted in the setting where we're trying to prevent cancers from happening again. So, you know, I'm hoping that a lot of patients and family members out there will take a look and speak with their family doctor about opportunities.
So, Victor, can you talk a little bit about some of the exciting clinical trials that you're offering? And what do you think is on the horizon? What are the most exciting clinical trials that
personally
that doing?
For me, certainly I can see the benefit already in terms of effective drugs for people living with cancer, but it's the prevention side that I'm very excited about. Looking at these drugs, how they're being added to other known effective medications in terms of preventing cancers from happening again. It's prevention. I mean, for medical oncologists, I guess the ultimate goal for me is to put myself out of business. And, you know, if people can live cancer-free, that's really what I want to see. So I think for me personally, I would like to focus my effort a little bit more on the prevention side. So patients who have had cancer, have seen you, let's say, with breast cancer and had their cancer removed, I would like to see that these drugs are being studied to see if we will prevent the cancer from coming back.
Dr. Victor Chang is Assistant Clinical Professor of Medicine at the Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.